Vom 15. Juli bis zum 18. August ist das LoRa in der Sommerpause. In der letzten Woche von der Sommerpause hört ihr das Endlos Sounds. 120 Stunden Live-Musik aus verschiedenen Orten in Zürich und natürlich auch immer auf 97,5 MHz. Bis dann spielen wir euch die besten Sendungen vom letzten Jahr.
Tauchen wir ein ins Archiv.
36 Grad und es wird noch heißer.
Hello, Alan Wasahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. Houston's community station, 90.1 FM, FM HD1, Galveston 89.5 FM, and Huntsville 89.7 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different cities in the US and Europe. The ongoing Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip that started on October 7th, 2023, and killed more than 48,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children, and injured more than 86,000 others, has been sold to the West based on Israeli lies that Hamas fighters committed sexual acts during their attack on October 7th. Israel used that lie to slaughter Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and destroy Gaza completely. Billionaire former Facebook executive Sheryl Sandberg released a film purporting to document the mass rapes Israel claims were carried out by Hamas fighters on October 7th. This film, titled Screams Before Silence, is being heavily promoted by several US politicians, the Israeli government, and countless lobby groups and media figures. In a podcast titled Debunking Screams Before Silence, Sheryl Sandberg's October 7th mass rapes film, Ali Abu Nama, director of the Electronic Intifada, breaks down Sandberg's film and shows how it is full of fabrications, distortions, lies, and does not present any credible evidence to support Israel's atrocity propaganda. I'm going to air that podcast during this episode of Arab Voices. Let's listen in.
I am Nora Barrows-Friedman. I'm here with Ali Abu Nima. I want to let you know that this next segment contains frank discussions of alleged sexual violence. Last week, billionaire former Facebook executive Sheryl Sandberg released a film purporting to document mass rapes carried out by Hamas fighters on October 7th. The film, called Screams Before Silence, has been heavily promoted by such figures as former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, ostensibly progressive Congressman Ro Khanna, and of course the Israeli government, among many others. Writing in the Washington Post on April 29th, columnist Ruth Marcus urged her readers, quote, "You should watch it and speak out about how rape and gender violence were deployed as weapons of war, about breasts cut from bodies, about nails driven into a woman's vagina. It has become the latest vehicle to push Israel's claims of mass rape on October 7th, claims that Israel supporters continue to use to either distract from or justify Israel's ongoing U.S.-armed genocide in Gaza. Since its release, it has garnered almost 600,000 views on YouTube alone. We're going to take a detailed look at the film now, and Ali is going to show us how it is full of fabrications, distortions, and lies, and does not, in fact, present any new credible evidence to support Israel's claims. Ali, let's start by reminding viewers about the role Sheryl Sandberg has played in pushing this story prior to the release of the film.
Thanks, Nora. Yeah, Sheryl Sandberg has indeed been pushing this story since soon after October 7th. And regular viewers may remember that we encountered Sandberg back in February when she and Hillary Clinton headlined a seminar at none other than Columbia University to promote the mass rape hoax. Sandberg chaired a panel featuring Jeffrey Gettleman, the lead author of the notorious and now almost completely debunked New York Times article from December called Screams Without Words. I don't think that it's a coincidence that the title of Sandberg's film, Screams Before Silence, echoes the headline of that New York Times article. Let's take a look at Sheryl Sandberg introducing Jeffrey Gettleman at that Columbia University event back in February.
Gettleman is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, foreign correspondent for the New York Times. For the past 20 years, he has covered every major conflict in more than 80 countries. Every so often, I get to talk to him in these places, and I can't believe what he's going through. His piece in December called Screams Without Words is the definitive piece on the sexual violence of October 7th. Incredibly hard to research, and we'll have a chance to talk about that.
As you just heard there, Sandberg praises the article Gettleman wrote with two Israeli co-authors as, quote, the definitive piece on the sexual violence of October 7th. But that's not the only praise she gives it. Here's another brief clip.
So the recent piece you just wrote, Screamed Without Words, builds on all the work you've done over the decades and is incredibly comprehensive. I think you spoke to over 100 people for the piece.
Now, as I said, that was back on February 9th. And recall that by that point, much of Gettleman's piece had already been debunked. For example, we had addressed it here on this live stream right at the beginning of January. I'll just mention right now that a lot of the rape claims that are in Gettleman's story do not appear in the Sandberg film. And I'm going to come back and talk about that later.
Okay, let's talk about Sandberg's film, Screams Before Silence. Give us an overview. I watched it yesterday. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, we watched it. I actually watched it several times so that nobody else has to. but yeah, let's look at this claim that's right at the beginning of the film. And this actually, this is a screenshot from the film, and it says, eyewitnesses and investigators have reported that Hamas subjected women to sexual violence and rape before they were killed. Those who were taken hostage suffered and continue to suffer physical, mental, and sexual abuse at the hands of Hamas terrorists. Now, there's a couple of things to note here. First, with respect to what supposedly happened on October 7th, the film speaks only of eyewitnesses and investigators, but not living victims. 7 months after this event, they have still not identified a single survivor. The second thing to note is that the film does not claim that there were merely some isolated and individualized incidents of rape. It insists, and this point is hammered throughout the film, that there was a pre-planned campaign of mass rape ordered by the leadership of Hamas. This is important to keep in mind. Just like previous efforts to promote this narrative, this film does not provide credible evidence of even one rape, let alone mass rapes on October 7th. The film does not identify a single victim of the alleged mass rapes on October 7th, either living or dead. They do claim, as we shall see, that there were dozens of women who were raped and killed, but they can't put a name or a photo to any of them. There are also no interviews with, say, family members of a rape victim, living or dead. They keep telling us to believe Israeli women, but once again, there are no Israeli women we are being invited to believe as victims, except for one, and she is not the victim of an alleged rape on October 7th.
And who is that?
So the only person they produce as a victim of an alleged sexual assault is a woman called Amit Susana. And starting in late March, her story was heavily promoted by the New York Times and the Israeli government's propaganda apparatus. Here's a short clip of her in the Sandberg film describing how she was captured and taken to Gaza.
10 men around me. And my instinct was just to fight, to do what I can.
Later in the film, Susana describes a pretty harrowing experience, the one she told the New York Times about in March. As I said, she does not claim that she was sexually attacked on October 7th. She claims that while she was being held in Gaza for 55 days, one of her guards, whose name she gives as Mohammed, forced her on one occasion to perform an unspecified sexual act. But Susana only publicly revealed this account months after her return from Gaza and in the context of a highly coordinated campaign involving the New York Times and the Israeli government. So, for example, when Susanna first spoke to the media back in January about her experience in Gaza, she never mentioned the alleged sexual assault. And her story was rolled out at the same time that the New York Times and other Western media were largely ignoring credible firsthand accounts of sexual violence against Palestinians by Israeli soldiers. So this one story got huge publicity, while the testimonies of Palestinian women and men about sexual violence against them were just ignored. Now, Amit Susanna does not claim that there are any witnesses to what she says she experienced in Gaza, so it's really impossible to verify or completely discount her claim. But the key point is that even if we take her account to be entirely true, it does not in any way support the main thesis of the film. Susanna describes one individual taking advantage of his power over her in an isolated situation and on one single occasion. Nothing in her account, again, if we accept it as completely true, supports the claim that there was a pre-planned campaign of mass rape on October 7th, or even that there is such a campaign against the female Israeli soldiers who are still in Gaza after the civilian women were released in November. From the perspective of Sandberg and other Israeli propagandists, focusing on Amit Susanna is, however, understandable because they do not have any other victim, not even one, from October 7th itself.
In the film, Sheryl Sandberg shows clips of various captured, supposedly Palestinian fighters confessing to rapes. What can you tell us about that?
Well, again, in the absence of any identifiable victims, the Sandberg film includes footage supplied by Israel of supposed confessions by captured Palestinians, interrogated and almost certainly tortured by Israel. Torture by Israel is, of course, well-documented, pervasive, and routine, and has dramatically increased since October 7th. The methods routinely used include inflicting physical and psychological torture and explicitly threatening to murder or rape relatives of a detainee if they do not provide the statements Israel demands. We have to be clear that confessions obtained or suspected to have been obtained under torture can never be considered credible evidence, and not even the New York Times and other Western publications that are always so eager to launder Israel's lies have cited them as evidence. You'll recall also that a few weeks ago we talked about the report written by Pramila Patten, the UN Secretary General's special advisor on sexual violence in conflict. And in an article for the Electronic Intifada, our colleague Asa Winstanley and I heavily criticized that report for its strong pro-Israel bias. But even that report was not willing to launder torture confessions. The Patton report actually states that the UN team did not consider accounts collected by Israeli intelligence bodies through, quote, interrogations of alleged perpetrators, despite some being offered, due to the mission team's inability in the time allotted to establish the due process rights of the accused persons and adequate authentication, end quote. Also, the human rights group Physicians for Human Rights Israel, which has unfortunately given undue credence to Israel's mass rape claims, has also warned that the so-called confessions were obtained by interrogations that included the use of torture, and thus it does not consider them valid. And even the Israeli police have had to admit that they could not match these so-called confessions with any victims. So this alone should discredit the entire film. But instead, we see so-called progressives, as you said, people like Rohana, and of course, self-proclaimed champions of women's rights and human rights, like Hillary Clinton, heavily promoting a film that shows prisoners who are tortured making confessions.
So, Ali, if there's no credible confessions and no firsthand accounts from alleged victims of rapes on October 7th, how does the film try and convince viewers that this is what happened?
Well, a lot of it is atmospherics. If you watch it, you'll see there's a lot of sort of doom and gloom music and Sheryl Sandberg crying and hugging people and people talking about terrible things that they experienced or witnessed on October 7th. None of which are rapes. But when it comes to the rapes, one tactic is just to assert that there's an overwhelming amount of evidence without actually showing any of it. So let's take a look at this clip of Israeli police superintendent Mirit Ben-Mayor talking to Sandberg.
With clear instructions to kidnap as many, to rape as many, to humiliate as many, to murder as many, they came here with a mission and they succeeded in the mission.
How much evidence is there of the crimes of October 7th?
There's a lot of evidence. We have over 200,000 visuals that we've collected. We have over 2,000 testimonies that have been taken. Among these evidence, we have substantial evidence for sexual violence that took place on the 7th of October.
So that might sound pretty convincing to an uninformed audience, but as we've said before on this live stream, Israel has never claimed and is still not claiming that there is a single piece of video that shows a rape taking place. And that is an extraordinary absence, given the fact that you just heard once again that this was a systematic campaign of mass rape. But you do not have to take my word for it. Here's what the Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported as recently as April 18th in an article that is actually trying to boost, not debunk, the mass rape claims. And I quote from Haaretz. It says, from inquiries put to three bodies in the defense establishment by Haaretz, it emerges that the intelligence material collected by the police and the intelligence bodies, including footage from terrorists' body cameras, does not contain visual documentation of any acts of rape themselves. End quote. So here's another example of a claim that there is just a ton of evidence where none exists. This is a woman called Shari Mendez, who is described as an Israeli army reservist who is at the Shura military base that was being used as a makeshift morgue on October 7th.
The Shura base, which is where all the victims of the October 7th massacre were brought. There were body bags lining the corridors from the floor to the ceiling on both sides. And we never knew what we would see. We never knew what the level of the atrocity would be inside the body bag. As we did more and more of what we were tasked to do, we realized that women had not just murdered. Women were shot in the head so many times that it seemed like there was an intention, an objective, to obliterate their faces. Most often, families couldn't be shown the faces of their daughters. And we began to see that some of it was sexual in nature, directly targeted sexual violence. Some came in with no clothing and mostly very bloody underwear.
Did this feel systematic to you?
Yes, it did seem systematic to use sexual violence as a weapon of war.
So now let's go back to that April 18th article in Haaretz, and here's what it says, quote, at the Shura base, to which most of the bodies were taken for purposes of identification, there were five forensic pathologists at work. In that capacity, they also examined bodies that arrived completely or partially naked in order to examine the possibility of rape. According to a source knowledgeable about the details, there were no signs on any of those bodies attesting to sexual relations having taken place or of mutilation of genitalia. End quote. The article also says that there were police forensic teams at the Shura base, and then it says, quote, these teams did not document a single case of sexual assault or cases of genital mutilation, end quote. And let's also go back to the UN report, which says that the UN team examined thousands of photos and video clips provided by the Israelis. The UN report says, quote, in the medico-legal assessment of available photos and videos, no tangible indications of rape could be identified, end quote. So Shari Mendez is just a liar.
And there's no forensic evidence either. What are some of the other tactics that the film uses to try and convince viewers that we're dealing with something real here, besides the moody music and the close-up shots of Sheryl Sandberg patting the backs of people?
There is a huge emphasis on trying to shock viewers with claims that witnesses observed mutilated bodies with signs of sexual violence, including the insertion of objects such as iron bars and nails into the genitalia and around the groins of victims. Another horrific claim is that bodies were found in positions that indicated that victims had been raped, for example, with their legs spread apart. I want to emphasize that absolutely none of these claims are being made based on proper forensic examinations or by qualified experts. So let's look at a few clips from the film. And again, I have to warn that the things being described are pretty explicit and horrible. Let's take a look at this first clip.
Cut to pieces. You can't identify if it's a man or a woman. Everything was ripped.
ראיתי גופות צרופות, גם של גברים, גם של בנות.
כשאתה רואה אדם, גבר או אישה, שהגופה השרופה שלו היא בתנועת התכווצות, בתנועת התגוננות, אתה מבין שקודם שרפו ואחר כך הם מתו.
A lot of the bodies were naked, totally.
In your experience, how often have you found naked bodies?
Never. Never.
When I got out, I saw so many bodies. Their shirts were ripped off. And girls without skirts, without pants, their legs were spreaded. They were abused. The bodies were abused.
Yeah, so the people we just saw in that clip, in order of first appearance, were Simcha Greinman of Zaka, a Jewish group that recovers bodies for burial, and we'll come back to them later. He is followed by Elad Avraham, who worked as a security guard at the Supernova rave, that famous rave a few miles from Gaza. And then Chaim Otmazgin, also of Zaka, and finally Tali Binner, a woman who survived the Supernova rave. And these are really horrific claims. And for those who are listening and couldn't read the subtitles in the Hebrew section, the account in Hebrew was similar to what you heard in English. It was talking about burned, mutilated bodies and that kind of thing that the person assumes indicates rapes. But again, this person is not an expert. Now, let's watch a bit more of Simcha Greinman from Zaka.
When we picked up the mattress, we found her body. This woman, we could not identify her from her face. She was naked totally. And she had nails around her female organs.
It's quite a claim.
Yeah. And then now there's more, unfortunately. This is a clip of Simcha Greinman again and Chaim Otmazgin of Zaka showing photos to Sheryl Sandberg that they claim show evidence of some of the horrors they just described. Let's look at that.
Okay, I'd like to see some of what you saw.
אנחנו רואים כאן בתמונה אישה שקרעו לה את המכנסיים, ירו בה במפסע.
As you can see, the body was brutal in different stages. This is the part of the breast.
זה אישה שירו לה כאן, זאת אישה שירו לה כאן.
Over here, and over here, and over here.
Oh my God.
Of course, we don't see those photos.
That's right. And it continues for that a little bit longer, but it's more of the same. And again, Otmazgin, who's speaking in Hebrew, he's talking about, you know, things inserted around the groin area. But as you say, at no point do we see those photos that they're showing to Sheryl Sandberg ourselves. And then finally, this is a clip of a man called Rami Davidian, who claims to have single-handedly rescued hundreds of people from that supernova rave on October 7th.
כמו קרשים, כמו ברזלים. מעל 30 בנות נרצחו ונאנסו פה. הייתי צריך לסגור את הרגליים שלהם, לחסות את הגופות שלהם. שאף אחד לא יראה מה שאני ראיתי, אף אחד. אף אחד לא יכול לראות דברים כאלה.
It's okay.
I don't even know what to say about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, just to summarize for those who are listening and couldn't read the subtitles. So Rami Davidian, they're standing in the forest where this supernova rave took place. And he claims that he saw women tied to trees who had been raped, who had been burned, who had had objects like iron rods and wooden boards inserted into their private parts. And then he says that... I mean, no one else was around, according to him. It was just him. And then he says what he did is that he, if their legs, I'm sorry about how graphic this is, but he, you know, if their legs were spread, he closed their legs, he covered everything up. And he said, so no one else could see. So what's interesting about that is if we are to believe what he's saying, then he is admitting that he actually tampered with a major crime scene in order to destroy the evidence of the thing, the things he says he saw so that no one else could ever see them. And that turns out to be very convenient indeed, because Rami Davidian is a huge liar.
I know you have more to say about him, Rami Davidian, and some of these other characters that we just saw in that in those clips. But let's start with those claims themselves. Why do you think they are not credible?
Right. First, let's go back to that UN report again by Pramila Patten, the UN Secretary General's special representative on sexual violence and armed conflict. And here's what it says about the claims about objects being inserted into people's private parts. This is paragraph 65 of the report, which actually rejects a number of the most prominent Israeli atrocity claims about October 7th. But look at that last sentence. It says, quote, allegations of objects found inserted in female genital organs also could not be verified by the mission team due in large part to the limited availability and low quality of imagery. And then this is paragraph 47 of the same UN report, which addresses the claims about the positions in which bodies were allegedly observed. It points to, quote, erroneous interpretations of the state of bodies by some volunteer first responders without relevant qualifications and expertise. Some examples include mistaking post-mortem pugilistic posturing, a boxer-like body posture with flexed elbows, clenched fists, spread legs, and flexed knees due to burn damage as indicative of sexual violence, misinterpreting anal dilation due to post-mortem changes as indicative of anal penetration, and mischaracterizing grazing gunshot wounds to genitalia as targeted genital mutilation using knives. End quote. And those are all precisely things you heard people in the Sandberg film saying, especially the people from Zaka. You saw Chaim Ott-Mazgin claiming that he saw people with clenched fists like this, as if they were trying to defend themselves. And you just heard what the UN report said about that. Now, I also want you to keep in mind those words, burn damage, because so many of the people in this film refer to bodies being burned and torn apart. And what is the most likely explanation for that? I'd suggest that the obvious explanation, one the film doesn't discuss at all, is Israel's massive and indiscriminate use of helicopter gunships and other powerful weapons that cause precisely the kind of injuries described by the people in the film and the UN report. Remember that the Israeli police have already admitted that Israel fired on people at the supernova rave using Apache helicopters. And of course, not just at the supernova rave, the dozens of Apaches were firing indiscriminately. And as we at the Electronic Intifada have reported many times, all based on Israeli sources, Israel applied the so-called Hannibal Directive on October 7th, a military doctrine that allows Israel to kill its own people rather than allowing them to be captured.